We're holding the end of Shmuel. We're holding Shmuel Beis, the 21st chapter. We had seen last week how there was a drought for 3 years, and David HaMelech initially thought it was for one sin that the Jewish people had done, and then he thought it was for another sin, and then he thought it was for another sin. After 3 years, when he saw that they came back to him each time, and they said, nope, we didn't do that wrong, didn't do this wrong, didn't do that thing wrong. He said, okay, must be me. And then I turned to God and said, okay, why is there a drought? And God said, for two reasons. One, that Shaul, King Saul, hadn't been eulogized properly. And two, that when King Saul had wiped out the city of Nob, so there had been Givonim there, as we discussed last week. And the Givonim had lost their Parnassah. And even though the Givonim were non-Jews, and they tricked us, and really we were supposed to fight them, and they weren't supposed to be in the land of Israel, but we had promised them that we'd take care of them. And now when Shaul killed out the city of Nob, so as a byproduct, the Givonim lost their Parnassah, and 7 Givonim died. So God says they have to be appeased. So David asked them that they should forgive the Jewish people, and they refuse. They say, we want blood. We want 7 of Shaul's offspring. Now, we should note 2 interesting points here. Who did Shaul kill? Shaul killed the Kohanim, right? What about their blood? The Givonim were a byproduct of what Shaul did. But what about the Kohanim themselves? So, we have a tradition. We read in Yeshaya that when Sennacherib came to destroy Jerusalem, so he stood overlooking Jerusalem and said, Od hayom benov lamod. There's still time to stand at Nob. So the simple understanding is that Sennacherib looked out upon Jerusalem and he said, oh, that's a small city. I don't have to rush and attack it today. I still have time. I could stay here at Nob. But our tradition is different. Our tradition is that what the verse is referring to is a conversation that went on between Sennacherib and his stargazers. The stargazers looked into the stars and said, if you attack today, you could conquer Jerusalem. And he rushed forward and God gave him light speed. He did 10 days journey in 1 day. And after coming and seeing that he swiftly made it to Jerusalem, he stood and overlooked Jerusalem. He said, this is the city you made such a ruckus about? This is nothing. Hey, everyone's tired from the journey. We'll take it tomorrow. And the stargazer said, no, today if you attack, you'll succeed. And he said, what's the big deal? I've conquered every other big city in the world. This city is nothing. That's the great Jerusalem. And he didn't know that up until that day in heaven, the Jews were being held in, so to speak, they were being held at bay. And God said, if someone wants to come destroy Jerusalem, he will be able to do it because of the sin that Nob, the city of Nob, was killed out. All of the Kohanim were killed in Nob. That bloodshed that the Jewish soldier Doeg HaAdomi killed out the city of Nob, even though the Pasuk doesn't say any clear indication of a punishment, our tradition is that that verse in Yeshaya is referring to this, that hundreds of years later, when Sennacherib has exiled the 10 tribes and he returns to destroy Jerusalem, up to that day, the sin of Nob was hanging against us, but up to that day, not the next day. So when Sennacherib is standing there and his stargazers say, no, attack today, and he says, it's not a big deal, it's a small city, we're all tired from the journey. And that night God sends out an angel and 160,000 generals of his die, and they all, and the great miracle, Jerusalem is saved. That up to that day we were being held for the blood of the Kohanim. But another understanding says that who were the Kohanim? They were Jews. Why is it that the Givonim aren't willing to forgo the blood that was spilled of their men? Because they're not Jews. And David HaMelech says that if they're not willing to forgo that blood, then they're not fit to become Jews. If they are not Rachmanim, if they're not willing to have compassion, then they're not fit to become a Ger. Only a person that exhibits these traits, Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gomli Chasadim, that he has compassion, that he gets embarrassed, that he does kindness, only he can become a Ger. And they're not exhibiting those traits, so we're not going to accept any Gerim from them. So what about the Kohanim? They had a whole city of Kohanim wiped out. The Kohanim, they were Jews, so they forgave. They didn't hold that against us. So that wasn't the cause of drought. Now, we can extrapolate from this. If here we have a people that didn't belong among the Jews, they tricked us, and we never accepted Gerim from them afterwards. And nonetheless, when Shaul caused damage to their Parnassah, the whole Jewish people had to pay a price for it. How much more so do we have to think about not harming directly someone else's Parnassah? And sometimes people think, no, Saul hurt his Parnassah, what's wrong? No, it doesn't work that way. We're not allowed to cause another person a loss. So now, David is responsible to take 7 children from King Saul's family. And they bring them before the Aron, and comes out 2 of Shaul's sons, his direct sons, from his Pilegesh, Ritzpah, and 5 of his grandchildren, the children of Merav. Now what's very interesting is that Merav was supposed to be David's wife. She wasn't his wife in the end. Shaul forcibly took her and gave her to someone else. He had promised her to David. And then when the time came and he was supposed to pay up, he gave her to Adriel HaMecholati. Imagine what David was thinking when he lost that Shiddach. Boy, I could have married the king's daughter. I was supposed to marry the king's daughter. That Shiddach was supposed to... I was promised that girl. Imagine what he was thinking. Only now, 40 years later, do we see that if he would have gotten that Shiddach, he would have lost 5 children. Sometimes only 40 years later do we realize the blessing in not having gotten a certain Shiddach. David HaMelech lost it. He didn't get Merav. And then he married her sister, Michal. But only 40 years later do we see the product of that, that her 5 children are the children that end up being put to death now. So, the halacha is that when we hang a person, we have to take him down by nightfall. And here, they decided that if God isn't giving rain, we're not taking them down. And they remained hanging throughout the summer for 6 months. In Ritzpah Vataya, David's Shaul's Pilegesh took a sack, pitched her tent next to their corpses, and all day and all night, by day she chased away the vultures, by night she chased away the wild animals to ensure that their bodies remained intact, that animals wouldn't eat their body. Now, people who passed by would see these bodies hanging and they'd say, what's going on here? This is Israel. The Bible says you're not allowed to leave corpses hanging. So, how are these bodies hanging? And then people would say, oh, these are the bodies, they're the sons of King Saul. Say, princes? How did they let princes remain hanging? So they said, yeah, well, King Saul didn't treat Gerim properly, and these were Gerim that really shouldn't have joined the Jewish people, and nonetheless, the Jewish people avenged what was done wrongfully to them. And it caused such a Kiddush Hashem that 150,000 people became Gerim as a result of this story. When this story became widespread, 150,000 people said, what? That's how they're treating them? This is a nation we want to join. And we had 150,000 Gerim who will, in the book of Melachim, be a tremendous force in querying out the stones to build the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo is going to send them to dig out the stones that we're going to build the Beis HaMikdash with. That's these 150,000 Gerim. It's interesting, I sent out a link to those people that are on our mailing list of a video. And one of the things they say in that video is that the state of Israel treats Arabs better than any state in the Middle East. Arabs have more rights in this country than any Arab state in the Middle East. Nowhere else do they have such a democracy, so many rights. You know, it's something I never thought of. So today people don't want to see that. But I guess in David HaMelech's time, people were more honest. 150,000 people converted to Judaism. So this was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Now, when David HaMelech also had a responsibility to eulogize Shaul, so he took Shaul's bones and the bones of his son Yonasan, and he brought them from Yavesh Gilad, where they had been buried initially, and he buried them by their grandfather's burial plot, by Kish, and he sent word through the towns of Israel that in every town they have to call a meeting and bring everyone together and eulogize Shaul. And after they did that, it started raining, the drought ended. And when the drought ended, so they took down the bodies and they buried them. And David praised Ritzpah Vataya for taking care of those bodies. And now the Navi goes a little bit out of order. it recounts the different wars that David had with Goliath's brothers. You remember David fought Goliath, the great giant Goliath. That was David's claim to fame. Goliath was the son of Arpah. You remember David is a great-great-great-grandson of Ruth. So her counterpart, her sister-in-law, Arpah, went and married into the Philistines, and she had some amazing children. Amazing children, I mean, militarily. So we have stories here that the Navi doesn't tell us the details of the stories, but we have on tradition long stories as to what happened here. The first story is a man by the name of Yishbi. So the story tells us that Yishbi was a Nov, and he had this great spear, and he was about to kill David. So our sages say, what does it mean Yishbi was a Nov? Nov was a Jewish city. So our sages say that God appeared to David and said to him, David, you caused many people to die because you went to Nov and you took the bread. And because of you, King Saul heard that you took bread from Nov, so he killed out the city of Nov. And ultimately, Doeg got killed because he killed the city of Nov. And King Saul lost his life and his children lost their lives because he killed the city of Nov. And all this is because of you, David. So the truth is we have to ask ourselves, what do you mean all this is because of him? David HaMelech was about to die of hunger. He ran to Nov and said, give me some bread, because he was about to die of hunger. He had spent 3 days without food. He was going to die. So what's it David's fault? So it seems that on some level, David, in spite of the fact that he was dying of hunger, could have been slightly more careful to ensure that word would not go back to King Saul. Because David later says, he himself says, I knew it when I went there and took bread, that they'd go and tell King Saul and bad things would come out of it. I am responsible for the blood that was shed. So God appeared to David and said, you know, you have this sin weighing on you. You have two choices. Either all your offspring will be wiped out, or you're going to be killed by your enemies. What do you choose? And David said, let me be killed by my enemies. So God made it that he was hunting a deer, and every time he shot, suddenly a deer showed up in front of him one day, and he shot at it, and he missed. So he chased a little further, and he shot at it, and he missed. And then he chased a little further, and by the time he realized it, he was in Philistine territory. And when he enters Philistine territory, Goliath's brother, Yishbi, sees him and says, you killed my brother. And he was a giant. He picked up David. He picked up David. And he put him in an olive press. And he started bashing the olive press down. And he said, I'm gonna wipe you out now for what you did to my brother. Now, this is what the Navi says. Yishbi, in the city of Nov, overtook David. It doesn't mean literally in the city of Nov, but because of David's sin, whatever minuscule sin he had for what he caused the city of Nov to be wiped out, because of that, this Yishbi, Goliath's brother, was able to take him. And God made a miracle that the ground under him like softened and he was mushed into the ground. And David refers to that in Tehillim, that miracle that happened. So Abishai, his nephew, was in the middle of taking a shower for Shabbos, and suddenly he sees blood in the shower. Suddenly a pigeon comes and flaps its wing and knocking against him. And Avishai says, wait a second. The Jewish people are compared to a pigeon. Must be the Jews are in danger. So he runs out of the shower and he runs to King David's home, his uncle. And he sees King David is gone. So he says, I got to go find him. Who's going to bring me to him? His horse will know the way. Am I allowed to ride on a king's horse? So he says, I don't know. It's a time of danger. Something's wrong. But I don't know what's wrong. Am I allowed to ride his horse? So he runs to the rabbis. And he says, tell me, am I allowed to take his horse? So they say, yeah, in the time of danger, grab on his horse. So he jumps on his horse, and God gives him kfitas aderech. And Yishbi sees that this olive press thing isn't working. So he says, okay, I'm going to finish him off a different way. And he flings David into the air, and he picks up, he has this huge spear, and he puts it in the ground, and he says, you're going to fall on this. And David's flying, and he's headed down. So Avishai is on his way, and he's riding, and he sees David in the air. So the Gemara says, this is the Gemara, that he said one of God's secret names, and David was frozen. What was the name? I'm not allowed to tell. And David got frozen mid-air. So the Gemara says, well, David knew the secret names. Why didn't he say one of the names? So the Gemara tells us an important concept. Ein chavush matir atzmo mebet asurim. A person who's imprisoned can't release himself. And this is a concept that we apply many times. It's a reference not only to a person who's in prison, that he needs someone else's help to get out, but it's also a person who has troubles financially. Very often we need someone else's help. A person who has trouble in the family, even though he might have helped thousands of other people. When he's got his own troubles at home, he needs someone else's advice. And it's also applied very often to psychological issues, that a person might know all the advice to tell other people, but when he himself has a problem, he better go to someone else. a person like they always say, a psychologist should go to another psychologist if he needs help. Don't try to self-prescribe. My brother always tells me he doesn't want to be a doctor for the family. It's never good. Even though he's a pediatrician, he says, go to another doctor. I'll treat everyone else, but it's not good that someone within the family will be the family doctor. So I like to say that as a rabbi. Go to someone else. It's not good they should be your own family's rabbi. But David was flying, twirling in the air, and he couldn't be focused. He couldn't say God's secret name. So Yishbi saves him. So Avishai saves him. So Avishai catches up to him and he says, David, how'd you get into this muck? So David says, well, God gave me two choices. He said, either I lose all my offsprings or I get caught by my enemy. So Avishai says, well, go tell God that you want all your offsprings to go and you don't want to fall in your enemy's hand. So David says, why? So he says, because people say, you take care of yourselves and don't worry if your children end up having to buy even the cheap, to buy even the cheapest commodities like wax. They'll take care of themselves. You take care of yourselves, your kids will take care of themselves. So David says, okay, you convinced me. So they both prayed to God that God should overturn this. And meanwhile, this Yishbi is chasing them. So they run. And the Gemara says they reached one city and they said, we should take him on. We're two, he's one. And they kept running. And they reached another city and they entered Jewish territory and they said, we should really take him on. So I skipped part of the story. When Avishai was on the way to help David, the Gemara says, Arpa saw him. And Arpa wanted to kill him. So she took the spool she was working with and she threw it at him and she missed. So she made believe like she's a sweet old lady and she says, lad, I dropped my spool. Could you pick that up for me? So Avishai picked it up and threw it at her and killed her. This is like a fantastic Gemara. Obviously there's more depth to it than this cartoon-like story. Avishai says, okay, I got a plan. So they're running away from this giant, Yishbi, and Avishai tells him, you know your mother's dead. So Yishbi says, what? And he gets startled for a second, and in that second they overtake him, and that's the end of Yishbi. Yeah?
He asked a question before. Jews don't hunt. Why is David like it?
Jews don't hunt for the fun of it. But maybe he needs the hide to make a safer Torah. Kosher animal doesn't have to be shechted. A kosher animal's hide can be used for a sefer Torah. And maybe he would shoot it in the leg and then he'd be able to shecht it. If you shoot an animal in the leg, it doesn't have to. Okay, could be David knew how to do that too. Could be. I mean, I don't understand how Esav did it, but then again, what do I know? I've never hunted. I don't know. I wouldn't take these Gemaras literally. The Gemara is referring to a concept, but I don't think the Gemara means literally. What? Right? That Gemara also, I think we have to ask ourselves, what does the Gemara mean? This Gemara can't be understood literally. It could be understood literally, but I think there's probably more depth to it. Okay, let's continue. So, the Navi continues and tells us another story, that they killed another child of Arpa's. Ultimately, all of her children were killed. David HaMelech over here is called Elchanan. One of David's names is Elchanan. God had extra compassion. God gave a free gift. And his family's name is called Orgim, the weavers, because they used to weave the paroches for the Beis HaMikdash, for the temple. And it's interesting that we find in the Navi a few times that people are known by their donations. They're the family that donated this. They're the family that donated that. We have this throughout Divrei Hayamim. We have it in Shoftim. And now we have it here, that David HaMelech's family, he comes from a very important family in Israel, and yet, what's their claim to fame? They're the weavers. They weave the paroches. So, yeah.
I believe we still actually have that to this day, Rabbi.
So that's a different concept. In Halacha, we say that when you donate, so you should publicize your donation because that'll encourage other people to donate. That's a different concept. But here we see that the Navi recognizes them by their donation. That's their claim to fame. We have a story of the six-fingered individual, another child of Arpa's. He used to be able to manipulate a sword like no one else because he had an extra finger on each hand and each foot. And he also was wiped out. And Arpa had these unusual children. Not only all her children tried to kill the Jews, and they lost their war.
One of them
wasn't called Taylor. No, Goliath called himself. Goliath said, "Am I a dog?" Yeah. Okay, we're holding the 22nd chapter, and the 22nd chapter is a song that David HaMelech said towards the end of his life, recounting how God saved him from all his enemies. And this song, like many songs in Tehillim, has a duality. It's referring to David HaMelech, and it's referring to the Jewish people as a whole. And this is there's almost an identical chapter in Tehillim. There's a chapter that's almost identical to this one. And David HaMelech speaks about how God is his rock and God is his protector, and the fact that he made it and he didn't get killed by the enemies is all thanks to God. He was in situations where he felt like he was surrounded with death, and there was no way out, and he called out to God, and God accepted his prayer. He's referring to the fact that time and again he was a footstep away from death, and God always was there for him. And he recounts how God came down and gave the Jewish people the gift of the Torah, and God is beyond our perception, so to speak. God is enveloped with darkness, even though he himself is light. But the perception of God is beyond what we can perceive. David HaMelech, one of the things he recounts is the fact that he keeps the Torah, and because he's righteous, God protects him. He was whole in his faith, and so that's why God did this for him. He describes how God treats a person the way he behaves. If a person is righteous, so God is righteous with him. If a person is stubborn, so God takes care of him the same way. David HaMelech recounts how he had a bow that the string was a piece of copper. And when neighboring nations would come to visit him, they'd see that bow hanging, and they'd say, "Nah, he can't pull that string. It's copper, it's solid copper. He's just doing that to scare us." And David HaMelech would say, "Yeah, watch." And he'd take down the bow and he'd pull the string, and he said it was really miraculous, but God gave him that unusual strength. They say, I don't know if the story is true, that the Gra also had unusual strength, that he used to be able to like bend iron bars. Yeah. God sometimes... Yeah, the Gra was a little man. Did you ever see a picture of him? It was a very small... I could do that too. That's what's called a game. I could do it with my mind also. It's okay. But I was a magician as a kid. I know all of these games. I could also tell you your future, but it's all baloney. It doesn't look baloney. If I play it right, you'll believe me. Depends on how much you'll pay. It's always... you know how it works. Coin drop bad. You're not allowed to do magic tricks. Okay. So David HaMelech is saying, the one who taught my hands to really succeed at war is God. That's why I was successful. And the ability to chase after the enemies and succeed is God. And I have to tell you, I've read different books of Musar. The one book that had the most impact on me is Tanakh, because I think that this song is an example of the underlying theme throughout Tanakh. One of the things we're supposed to recognize is the way Tanakh portrays history. Tanakh isn't a history book, but Tanakh, every time we read in the Bible the stories of our successes and our falls, the Navi always reveals to us the story behind the story. The Navi always tells us the Jews sinned, so they fell into the hands of their enemies. The Jews did tshuva, so God saved them. The Navi always teaches us how to look at the occurrences of that time that the Navi is telling us. So here too, David HaMelech is saying, my success was contingent on the fact that I kept the Torah, saying that I was so successful that the nations would lie to me. They'd just hear my name and they'd start lying and saying, "Oh, we're faithful to King David," and out of fear. That's how, what a great name he had. What an awesome name he had. And he ends with what we say in benching, Migdol Yeshuot Malko Vose Chesed Limshichol David Uzaro Adonam. The uplifting, the making great of the salvations of his king and doing kindness to his anointed one, to King David and his offspring forever. The 23rd chapter is David's last prophecy, and we saw many many midrashim in our class in Tanda Be'elio that focused on the first pasuk of this prophecy. From this verse, we know that David HaMelech was a prophet, because it describes David's words as divrei, and divrei is always words of prophecy. He says the words of the man who was uplifted, who kam al. Here we see, by the way, a word that the shorish is two letters. Rashi holds throughout Tanakh that you could have a shorish with one letter as well. One letter, two letter, not like a modern diktuk. Rashi holds you could have a shorish of one letter, or two letters, or three letters. So this is a word that the shorish is two letters, according to Rashi. All, like lemala, all. The one that was uplifted. The anointed one and the one who composed the beautiful songs of Israel. He says how God spoke through him, and God said that I rule over man, and I let the tzaddik rule over me. Again, David HaMelech describes the importance of listening to what God says and being faithful to the Torah. That the Rishonim ultimately are damaging to themselves and to society. And then we have a recounting of David's great warriors. And the first one, and in recounting them, it describes David, that David was Yoshev Bashevet. David's Rebbe Ira Ya'iri used to sit on pillows when he was teaching class. When his Rebbe died, so they appointed David as head of the Beis Medrash. So David sat on the floor. He was Yoshev Bashevet. He sat down with all the students. So they told him, go sit on a pillow. So David said, not me. I can't sit on a pillow. I'm down with all of you. He sat on the floor. And God said, oh, you're being humble. You're sitting on the floor with them. I'll uplift you. David HaMelech is described over here as Tach Kimoni. God said, I'll make you like me, Kamoni. And Hu Adino Ha'etzni. When he was learning Torah, he'd soften himself like a worm. And when he went out to war, when he had to be tough, he was tough like a stick. So that's the balance that David had. There are times in life we have to know to be soft. We have times that we have to know how to be harsh. And David HaMelech knew how to balance that. He was doing both. When he'd go out to war, if he saw he was one against 800, he was used to killing 800 in a blow. So that's what it says, that he'd go up against 800 and he wouldn't step back. And he'd be sad. He'd say, God, you promised in the Torah, if we keep the Torah, we could take on, one would take on 1,000. And I can't do that yet. So God told him, you sinned with Uriah Achiti. You're not 100% perfect. So David said, but forgive me. And David HaMelech spent 17 years fasting and lying on the ground, and it harmed his health so much that the book of Melachim, that we're going to begin tonight, begins with David HaMelech being ill at the end of his days, and he can't heat himself. He lost his body heat because he was fasting and lying on the ground so many years. So the Navi records all the great warriors that David had, one that ended up falling on a wintry day into a pit with a lion, and he killed the lion, another one that fell into a pit with a Mitzri, and the Mitzri had a dagger, and he had no weapons, and he was able to steal the dagger from the Mitzri and kill him with it. There are different stories here about the great warriors of David. Once David was fighting the Philistines, and they were hiding among the Jewish crops, and he didn't know if he's allowed. There were Jewish crops, non-Jewish crops there, and he had to burn them both down to attack the Philistines, and he didn't know if he's allowed to burn down the Jewish crops. So he couldn't get word to the Sanhedrin. So three of his warriors snuck behind enemy lines, and they went and they got the psak, and they asked the rabbis, and the rabbi said, yeah, you could burn down the grain and go take on the Philistines. And David HaMelech, it says, David was thirsty for the waters of Beis Lechem. And these three warriors snuck into Beis Lechem, they brought him a glass of water. And he said, you risked your life for this glass of water, I'm pouring it before God, and he libated it before God. So that's a simple reading of the verse. Our tradition is that he wasn't thirsting for the waters of Beis Lechem. He was thirsting for this halacha. He said, I wish I could do better for my soldiers. It'll be a much quicker war if we could just burn down these fields, these Jewish fields. And he didn't know if he's allowed to halachically. So these three warriors, they snuck behind the enemy lines and they asked the rabbis. And when they came back, David HaMelech said, you risked your lives to know a halacha. I'm not going to reward you for that. And he poured it before Hashem, means that he instituted that this halacha would never be quoted in their name. It would be quoted as just the halacha in the Beis Medrash. In honor of Hashem, this halacha would be known. But he said, if you risked your lives to find out a halacha for me, so then I can't give you the honor of quoting this halacha in your names.
Why not? Why
he held it was wrong that they risked their lives for that. They shouldn't have. So it seems not. Seems that maybe it would have been easier, but it seems not.
It seems like a simple halacha. before.
Right, so maybe it wasn't Pikuach Nefesh.
Why can't they go back to Sanhedrin to ask
them
what was
up there? The Philistines were in the way.
So they could, if they went the first time, they could go by
the middle. Okay, maybe. So I don't remember the details of this halacha. I don't remember if it was Pikuach Nefesh, if it wasn't. We have to look it up. It's a Gemara. I just don't remember. Okay. We have Bineyahu ben Yoyada, the famous name of one of his warriors that was able to take on the two great lions of Moab and kill the lion in the pit on that wintry day. Our sages say this is all references to his great learning ability, that he was able, the lion is a reference to the book of Vayikra, and all the laws of Vayikra are very intricate, and on a short wintry day, in the winter the days are shorter, he was able to review all those laws in one day. That's how powerful he was in his learning, that's what Chazal say. And he was the one who took on the Mitzri, etc. From here we derive the definition of the word Gezel, because it says he was Gozel, the spear from the Egyptian. So from here we derive that to be Gozel means to come in a forthright manner and forcibly steal something from someone. Ari, do you mind turning on the air conditioning? Everyone's heads are drooping. Thank you. Sorry. And the last of the great warriors is Uriah Ahiti. Surprise, surprise. And the end of the book of Shmuel is a complicated story. We don't really understand this story. We have different Gemaras, Midrashim, that give us different reasons, but it's all difficult. We'll just raise the issues, read through the story, and then we'll do our Siyum. The story begins with a sentence that is difficult. God continued to be angry at the Jewish people. Why? Doesn't say. We don't either have a tradition. Our sages didn't reveal to us why was God upset at the Jewish people. And God sent a Satan to cause David to err. Why? So our sages give reasons. But at the end of the day, it's complicated. The question is a strong question, and the answer is difficult. And David suddenly got this urge to count the Jewish people. And he calls in his nephew, his chief general, Yoav, and he tells him, go throughout the Jewish people and count them. I want to know how many Jews are there. The Torah forbids us to count. So here the Mefarshim discuss what was David's error. That David thought maybe for his military needs he's permitted. There are different understandings as to what was David's understanding in the biblical prohibition. What was his mistake? But at any rate, he made a mistake. He thought for his needs he's allowed to count them, and he made a mistake. And Yoav tried to dissuade him. He said, may they be 100 times what they are today, and may you merit to see them. What do you want this for? And David insisted, and David and his nephew tried to dissuade him, and he insisted, and finally Yoav has no choice. So the first thing he does is he goes out, he takes a long journey crossing the Jordan to the tribe of Gad. He's trying to do this in the worst way possible. And he starts with the most hard-headed tribe, and he figures, I'll come to them, I'm telling them, I'm making a census, so these people are tough. The tribe of God, they always lead us to war. They're tough people. They'll tell me, get out of here. They'll kick me out. They won't agree. And he starts, and they disappoint him. They don't put up a fight. So, yeah.
Does Yoav know this?
He tries to argue with David, but David tells him, no, it's okay.
So, at the end, if he knows that it's against Halacha, then...
David was probably a bigger rabbi. There's always a question, do you listen, do you not listen? The king tells you to do something.
Yeah, but now when it's going against Allah.
That's not so simple. It's not so simple. A king, by a king, where there's an opinion that we do say that there's a Shaliach L'Dvar Avera. Why do we say in Shaliach L'Dvar Avera? Because we say, if Mr. Reuven tells Mr. Shimon, go do a sin, so we tell Mr. Shimon, well, God told you not to sin. You should have listened to God. But if Mr. Reuven is king, so Mr. Reuven will kill Mr. Shimon if he doesn't listen to him. So we don't necessarily have a claim against Mr. Shimon. Why'd you listen to him? Okay, so that's what Yoav does. Yoav starts by going to God. And then from God... Right, but God says, if you're going to count them, don't count them directly. Do it by each one giving a donation, and then count the donation. Each one gives a half a shekel. David counted them directly. That's what was the mistake. And even count, so here there are different opinions. Had David counted them with the machzis shekel, would it have been permitted or not? So according to one opinion, that was David's mistake. He thought it's permitted. And even counting through machzis shekel is only permitted when it's necessary. And here it wasn't really necessary. That's one understanding as to David's mistake. So Yoav, again, he takes the long route. He goes to a city that's a new city and people are scattered, so it'll take him a long time to count them. This one's living out there and that one's living in a different area, and it's a new area, it's just being inhabited, and he figures it'll take me a long time, and he's waiting for David to change his mind. And as much as he procrastinates, David does not send word to, that Yoav should stop. And after 9 months and 20 days, he comes back to Jerusalem and he gives the count. There are 800,000 soldiers, and in the tribe of Yehuda, you have 500,000 men. And after David has finished, his conscience steps in, and he feels bad. And he turns to God, and he says, I have sinned, I messed up. God, please forgive me, I've done a foolish thing. And David wakes up in the morning, and God sends God, the prophet, and he tells him, go tell David you have a choice of three. And God comes to David and he tells him, do you want 7 years of famine? 3 years where, 3 months where the enemies are chasing you and you're on the run? Or do you want 3 days when there's a plague throughout the land? Tell me now what to return, my master. And David tells him, Vayomer David el God. David tells God, Sar li me'od. I'm in a terrible predicament. I feel terrible. Nipilono v'yad Hashem. Let us fall in the hands of God. Ki rabim rachamov, his mercy is plenty, uviyad odom alepola, and let us not fall in the hands of man. If we're chased by our enemies, we're in the hands of man. If there's a famine and we have to beg our neighbors to sell us food, we're at the hands of mankind. Let there be a plague for 3 days where God controls it and God could be as merciful as he chooses. And when David says that, a plague breaks out, and David is praying and God is praying for the plague to this decree to be overturned. And from the minute they said that till the minute they brought the morning sacrifice, a few seconds passed and 77,000 people dropped dead. And the angel approached Jerusalem to destroy Jerusalem. And the angel was headed to the Temple Mount. Now on the Temple Mount there was a granary of a man by the name of Arvna Hayavusi. And David sees that people are dropping dead and he says, I sinned. What did they do wrong? Punish me, punish my family, but don't punish them. Some of the commentaries say that that's why David chose this punishment. He said, if I choose a famine, I'm protected, I'm king. The last piece of bread will be by me. If I choose to be chased by the enemy, I'm protected, I'm king. I'll always be the one running ahead. No one's going to hurt me. So I'm going to choose a punishment where everyone's equal. It's a plague. God chooses who drops dead. And this way, there's no favoritism here. I'm not more protected than the next guy. God will choose who will drop dead and who won't. That's why he chose this. He said, we're in God's hands. God should be merciful over us. And David runs and Arvna has heard that a plague has broken out. He's hiding with his family. And God tells David, go set up a mizbeach by Aravna's granary. And David runs up to Arvna, and Arvna peeks out. He thinks if he's hiding, maybe the angel won't find him. And David and his servants come, and Arvna bows to the king, and he tells him, what'd you come to me for? And David says, I want to buy this area from you to build an altar, and the plague will stop. And Arvna tells him, take it, it's yours. You can take the wood, everything you need, it's all yours. Arvna's scared for his life. And people are dropping dead all around the country. No one knows what's going on. So David says, no, I have to buy it. We don't give God, when we want to give something to God, we purchase it, full value. And David takes money from each tribe, and he purchases the Temple Mount, and he brings an offering. And when he brings the offering, the plague stops. And we have a tradition that the angel was headed there, and David saw the angel of death. It's not a tradition, it's a verse in Divrei Hayamim. And David saw the angel, and the angel had his sword out, and was dripping with blood. And David brought the sacrifice, so the angel had to stop. So he stuck his sword down and wiped off the blood on David's cloak. And David saw the angel of death's sword come right near him and pull back. And when he saw that, his blood curdled, his blood turned cold. And that's why the book of Melachim begins that the king David was old, and they tried covering him with clothing, with different garments. They tried warming him up and nothing worked. His blood had turned cold. That's the result of this story. And with this, the Navi ends. The book of Shmuel ends that God forgave the Jewish people, and the plague ended when David brought a sacrifice. We end the book of Shmuel with the purchase of the Temple Mount at full value, and God's stopping the plague after David brings the sacrifice. I want to share with you a story. We had a neighbor once told us that he still remembers as a kid going with his father to the Lower East Side to buy his pair of tefillin for his bar mitzvah. And he remembers standing at the store with his father, and the sofer takes out a pair of tefillin, and his father looks at it and says, "Yeah, that's beautiful, I want that for my son." And he asks him, "How much is it?" And the sofer says, "That'll be $200. And his father says, "I'll pay you $150 for it." And the sofer says, "Okay, I'll give it to you for $190. And his father says, "I'll pay you $260 for it." And he's haggling, $10 this way, $10 that way. And he says as a kid, $160. Each one goes up to $10 until they meet halfway. And he says he still remembers as a kid standing there and looking and saying, "This mitzvah is so precious. Why don't you pay full dollar for it? Why do you have to bargain for it?" He said as a kid, he thought back to this story, and he said, when it came time to buy the Temple Mount, we didn't haggle. They gave us a price, we paid full price, we said this is for the service of God, we want it, we're going to pay, and we're going to have it the way we should. And he said that to this day it bothers him. The man already had his own bar mitzvah children, that his father wouldn't pay full price for his tefillin, he had to haggle for it. So I'm not saying you always have to pay full price. I'm just saying if you're going to haggle, don't do it in front of your kids. And no, you have to think how it affects them. And sometimes we have to value the mitzvah enough that we have to think, hey, wait a second, well, why am I haggling? I'm getting something out of it. We should remember also that one of the mitzvah, the greatest form of giving tzedakah is giving a person parnasa. So if you're walking into a store where you know the guy's making a good parnasa, so you don't have to give him more. You can bargain with him. But if you're walking into a store where you know the guy is having trouble making ends meet, so if you're going to pay him another 2 shekel or another 5 shekel, you could count that I'm not haggling with him. I'm giving it to him, and I'm letting him earn his wages bechavod. If I'd haggle with him, he'd go down a few shekel. But this is a nicer form of tzedakah. If you'd give him 5 shekel because you know he needs help, so then it's better not to haggle with him. That's the best form of tzedakah. Yeah. No, the first explicit reference to Yerushalayim is when David killed Goliath. It says that David took Goliath's head and ran with it to Yerushalayim. And it doesn't say why, because at that point Yerushalayim was of no... It doesn't seem like Yerushalayim was of any importance. It seems from the Mishnayot that there were 2 cities in the period of the Second Temple named Yerushalayim. One was the Yerushalayim we have today in another city. And the Radak suggests in the name of his father that every city that was used as a central place for the worship of God was nicknamed Jerusalem. Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim wasn't the term only for what we know as Yerushalayim. When Yerushalayim was chosen a few years later by David HaMelech, 2 years later by David HaMelech and Shmuel, they figured out that that's where God wants the temple to be, that that's what God was alluding to throughout the Torah, then that became the Yerushalayim. But the first place we have a reference to Yerushalayim is when David kills Goliath. It says he took his head and ran to Yerushalayim. Yeah?
What is the symbolism behind the fact that there was a granary?
I don't know, but I just want to mention there's a famous story which I posted a few weeks ago about the two brothers. So when I read that story before I posted it, I said to myself, you know, this sounds like a Muslim story. I've never seen it in a medrash, and it doesn't fit with many medrashim. The story about the two brothers, each one would bring the other one five bushels. So this is a well-known story. One had children and the other one didn't have children. And each night one would bring the other one and the other one would bring that. And one night they met and God said, I want that for the Temple Mount. So I said to myself, this doesn't sound Jewish. Something here sounds off. And I started looking and researching, and I looked throughout the internet and I couldn't find anything. All I found was that Eisha Torah says that they couldn't find the source for this story. So I asked Rav Siegel and he couldn't find the source. And he asked his son-in-law who knows a lot and he couldn't find the source. So finally, I posted the... I said, you know what? If I grew up on this story and everyone else grew up on the story, I'll post it. You guys should read the story. I posted it on the bulletin board, and that's the best way to find the source. A guy comes to me a day later and he says, what'd you post a Muslim story for? So I said, what do you mean it's a Muslim story? So he told me that Rav Kustiner did spent a long time researching the story, and he found that the source of the story is in Muslim storybooks. It's a story that says that there were two brothers, one had children, one didn't have children, and every night each one would bring the other one 5 bundles of grain to help him out. So that story doesn't... I couldn't find the source in Chazan. I didn't find anyone else who could find the source in Chazan. I emailed many rabbis and they didn't know the source for it. So I also tell that story. That was the first bedtime story I put on the website. I started putting up bedtime stories on our Torah for Me website. But then I discovered that really it's a Muslim story. That the source for it is a Muslim storybook. So it doesn't show up. So now I stopped telling it. I took it off the bulletin board. I don't know. But our custom is that when we end a work that we've been learning for a long time, we do a siyum, we celebrate finishing it. It's brought, it's halach and shulchan aruch. When a person has learned something for a long time and he's invested in it, so when he ends it, he has to celebrate. So Bezrat Hashem, we're going to have a siyum now. You know?